ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 16, a description of Jambudvip. So I think it's 11 through 16. So these verses are in prose, Sanskrit prose, so I'll just read text number 11 in Sanskrit, and then we'll just read English for the other texts. Mandodara Meru Mandara Suparshvad Kumuda It Yut Ityayuta Yojana Vishvaronaha Merus Chaturdisham Avastamba Giraya Uplakta. Maybe we can just do the word for word together here. We can repeat and we'll just do it. And then we'll do the English. Mandara, the mountain named Mandara. Meru Mandara, the mountain named Meru Mandara. Suparshva, the mountain named Suparshva. Kumuda, the mountain named Kumuda. Iti, thus, Ayuta Yojana Vastara Unnaha. Which measure 10,000 yojanas high and wide. Mero of Sumeru. Chaturdisham. The four sides. Vastamba Giraya, mountains that are like the belts of Sumeru. Uplakta, situated. Okay, so I'll read right through text number 16. So if you've been following this, you know that it's already a pretty incredible description of this material universe we live in, Jambudvip. And so that continues today, the amazement of these verses. On the four sides of the great mountain known as Sumeru are four mountains, Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumuda, which are like its belts. The length and height of those mountains are calculated to be 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. Standing like flagstaffs on the summits of these four mountains are a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree. Those trees are calculated to have a width of 100 yojanas, 800 miles, and a height of 1,100 yojanas, or 8,800 miles. Their branches are spread to the radius of 1,100 yojanas. So does anybody know what the radius of the branches would be in miles? They're 1,100 yojanas. So what would it be? 8,800 yojanas, right there. One yojana is 8 miles. So, text 13 and 14. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharat dynasty, between these four mountains are four huge lakes. The water of the first lake tastes just like milk. The water of the second, like honey, and that of the third, like sugarcane juice. The fourth lake is filled with pure water. The celestial beings, such as the Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who are also known as demigods, enjoy the facilities of those four lakes. Consequently, they have the natural perfections of mystic yoga, such as the power to become smaller than the smallest or greater than the greatest. There are also four celestial gardens named Nanda, Nandana, Chitrarat, Vibrajaka, and Sarvatobhadra. Text 15, the best of the demigods, along with their wives, who are like ornaments of heavenly beauty, meet together and enjoy within these gardens, those gardens, while their glories are sung by lesser demigods known as Gandharvas. Text number 16 is on the lower slopes of Mandara Mountain is a mango tree named Devachuta. It is 1,100 yojanas high. Mangoes as big as mountain peaks and as sweet as nectar fall from the top of this tree for the enjoyment of the denizens of heaven. Purport in the Vayu Purana, there is also a reference to this tree by great learned sages, Aratinam Satan Avasto Eka Shast Javik Adikanicha Phalam Pramanam Akyantam Rishibis Tatvadarshibhi. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumini Tamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's interesting for me, come here to visit Radhadesh for talking about our Ministry of Education, and one of the main topics we talked about yesterday was how we can make the Ministry of Education relevant to people, to the devotees of ISKCON. So when I read these verses, I try to think, how can we make this relevant to us? I mean, these huge mountains, these huge trees, how is it all relevant to us? What is the purpose for us to spend our valuable time studying such things? Well, actually, it is very relevant to us, and hopefully during the course of our discussion this morning, we'll be able to explain that a little bit. But I want to start with how knowledge that's out of the ordinary is relevant in ways that people really have to wake up to. Harisari Prabhu recently posted something, I think to the GBC Discussions Conference or something, where he was quoting an article from a neurosurgeon. A neurosurgeon, apparently he got some kind of meningitis disease or something like that of the brain and spinal cord, and he was suddenly in a coma, and he was in a coma for I think a couple of months or something like that. And when he came out of the coma, he described that what he saw when he was in the coma. He was in a very beautiful heavenly place, and very awe-inspiring chants were going on there. And he had a companion to show him the way through that world where he found himself. Very beautiful young lady. He says he very distinctly remembers the features, high cheekbones and so many other things. And he didn't really know what to make of this. I mean, this man was a neurosurgeon. He was a scientist, basically. And he wasn't religious at all. He had no inclination toward any kind of religious things. But having this experience and coming out of that coma and then remembering this world that he had been transported to, it made him have to face the reality that there may be some kind of a spiritual existence beyond just what we experience with our senses and mind and intelligence in this material world. Unfortunately, for this man and for everyone who read his story, even though it's very attractive, it goes into the realm of speculation because it's outside the realm of any knowledge that exists in this material world. And so this man, who is a very prominent neurosurgeon, scientist, you know, he risks his whole reputation by going out there and putting out these fantastic stories that like they come out of Hollywood or something, you know. How can he say these things and be respected in society? People will laugh at him, make him... because there's no way anybody can confirm what he said. No way for anybody, that is, except for us. Not us, except for the great sages, except for Srila Prabhupada, who mercifully gave us the descriptions that we find in his books. This knowledge that we just read today, and I emphasize, this knowledge that we just read today in these verses sets us apart from everyone in this world who simply has to rely upon speculation when these kind of events happen in their lives, when they have some experience of other beings from higher planets, when they have experiences that are outside the realm of the ordinary in this material world. They have no reference point. But we have a reference point. The knowledge is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we shouldn't take it lightly, even though we read verses like this and they're hard to comprehend and the scale is completely beyond what we could relate to. Still, it's factual knowledge. So we're fortunate in that regard. But we're also fortunate in that this is not just jnana or knowledge. It's also vijnana. It's also realized knowledge. And that makes it more valuable to us. Not only do we know about these wonderful, incredible things, four flagstaffs on four mountains, a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree that are 800 miles wide. Not only do we know these things, but we can relate them to our own experience. We can relate them to our own experience. And I want to give you an example from my own experience, how it's not so strange to me to read these descriptions, because in a sense, I have, and many of us have, experienced these same things that are being described in the verse here today. A few years ago, we had an education meeting. Yadananda Maharaj was there in Italy. Rupa Sanatan was there also, and Radhika Raman, Ravinder Sroop, some other, a lot of devotees actually. Sudevi was also there. And so during the course of the meeting, there was one day when we took a break to go for like a little holiday. And we went to this lake. I don't know the name of the lake, but it's there in northern Italy. A very beautiful lake where the water was turquoise. color. It was beautiful. Do you remember that? You went. You didn't go. Oh, I tend to remember you. I tend to remember you. You took bath. You went swimming with others in the lake. Okay. Yeah, but this lake was a beautiful lake, and I've never seen water like that. I mean, it was in the midst of high mountains, just like just described here. Describes how the mountain peaks are there, and in between the mountain peaks there's these four huge lakes. It was just like that, very high mountains that came right down into the river, and this water was a very large lake, and the water was just incredibly beautiful. And, of course, there are many people there as well, because the tendency is, just like we find in this description in the Bhagavatam, the demigods and their wives wanted to go to those lakes for a holiday. The tendency is the same for all of us, to go for holiday. We want to go some beautiful place, a lake where there's mountains, and to enjoy the atmosphere there, just like it's being described here. So although the scale and obviously the beauty is different, the basic conditioned soul tendency is the same. It's the same in Jamadweep, the heavenly planets, as we find here. The desire to go out to nature to see something wonderful that's not often seen in nature and to enjoy in that atmosphere. So the conditioned soul has this tendency, this desire. And when we look at ourselves and our own circumstances in life, then and compare it to these things, again, on a different scale, larger, beautiful, more beautiful, but it's the same tendency to enjoy material comfort. And it's not just human beings. It's not just human beings. When I was growing up, we had a dog in our family. And this dog, he was a dog. But when no one was around, he would like to go up and sit on the couches because they had nice, you know, comfort pillows and stuff like that. So he would go up on the couch when no one was home and sit up there and lean on the cushions and everything. I mean, he's a dog, but he wasn't like he was satisfied with the floor. No, he wanted to enjoy the soft cushions. In a sense, he's not different than Hiranyakasipu. What does Hiranyakasipu mean? Yeah, he wants to go in a soft bed, you know, and lie there and be comfortable. He's a dog, but he has the same tendency. It's the tendency of the conditioned soul. And that's the point we're trying to make here, that the conditioned soul has a tendency to enjoy in certain ways. And the material universes provide an endless variety of ways in which to do that. We can go to these mountains and enjoy a wonderful time there. We can go and we can bathe in the rivers that are created by these mangoes falling. We didn't read all these next verses describe further how these mangoes, they fall from this big mango tree, and then from the juice, rivers flow. And those rivers, they create gold as they're flowing. So it's a very beautiful place, a very opulent place. And so naturally people would want to go there and enjoy, just like we would want to go there and enjoy. And indeed, our very nature, our very desire to enjoy like this is one of the reasons why this description is here. Because if we are going to give up this material world for the spiritual world, we have to know what we're giving up. I think Srila Prabhupada gave the description sometime, at least certainly the devotees talked about this, is that sometimes on our way back to Godhead, if we look down, you know, if we're going back to Godhead, and if we look down and we see what we're crossing over, the conditioned soul, the liberated, almost liberated soul gets attracted and says, well, wait a minute, I'm not ready to go back to Godhead yet. Let me go down here and check out this Mango River with the gold on the banks of it. So we should be aware of what pleasures, what opulences we find in this material world so that we're not attracted by that as compared to pure devotional service. Therefore, we find this description of the material universes in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But these descriptions are, and similar descriptions are found elsewhere in our literatures as well. For instance, in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he describes not only the type of atmosphere we find in different places in this material world, but different types of atmosphere we find in different areas of the spiritual world. Again, we're so fortunate to be given this knowledge which is so complete in presenting experience. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is there. Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, gives a description of the spiritual world. And it's interesting that in the description of the spiritual world, it describes trees. I mean, maybe we do think about it, but sometimes it may not be the most prominent thing in our mind. But there's in these verses we read today, there are descriptions of these trees. And it's also in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of the spiritual world, and it talks about the trees in the spiritual world. So there are trees in the spiritual world also, just as there are trees here. But it describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam third canto that the trees are different there. Who knows the difference between the trees here and the trees there? Yeah. There? Well, see, that's how we would think. That's how we would think, you know, that they're kind of ethereal or something like that. You know, that's how. But actually, no, they're solid trees and everything like that. But they have a difference. They have a difference. They're eternal and conscious. Yes, it's described specifically there. It says that they're eternal and conscious, and because they're eternal and conscious, they can do something that trees in this world really can't. They're desire trees, Suresh Prabhu wants to say. They're desire trees, yeah. Because they're eternal and they're conscious, they're like, they're people. And so if you ask a person something, that person can give you what you want. But if we ask a tree in this world, even if it's like a wonderful, amazing tree like this tree that's on the slopes of the Mandara Mountain, which is 8,800 miles high with big mangoes. If we ask that tree, please give me a rose apple, it can't do it. Because in the material world, the trees are not desire trees, are not trees which are there to facilitate you just like a person. They'll give you a mango, and they'll give you an unlimited supply of mango, but that's all they can give you. They can't give you a rose apple. So that's the difference between trees in the spiritual world and not here, in this material world. Now, there's another very important difference in the atmosphere of the spiritual world and the material world described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And ultimately, this idea of the attitude of the residents, of the living entities there in the spiritual world, is the real difference between the material world. The real difference between the material world and the spiritual world is the attitude of the living entities that you find there. And so it's described that the living entities in the spiritual world are non-envious. And it gives an example there about the birds. The birds in the spiritual world, they sing just like the birds here. But in the spiritual world, when one bird is singing and another bird starts to sing, and their tune is more pleasing to Krishna than their own, then they stop and they listen. They stop and they listen. It's not like, oh, I have to do better. I have to compete with this person, which is the attitude in this material world, isn't it? In the material world, we're always in competition with one another to be the best. And we always want to put down someone else's service or activities. Or we want to conquer it. Just like it described these gardens here, Nanda, Nandana Garden. Now there's a garden in the heavenly planets called Nandanandana Garden, and that belongs to Indra. But when you read in the Bhagavatam, anybody who conquers the heavenly planets, it says that they enjoy the Nandanandana Gardens. You know, these gardens are a very beautiful place. And whoever conquers the plant, the reason why they're conquering, because they want to enjoy these things. They want to enjoy those beautiful gardens. And so you'll find a description that they enjoyed the Nandanandana Garden. Not just that they conquered and they didn't enjoy the facilities. They wanted those facilities for themselves. They didn't want Indra to have them. They wanted them for themselves, to enjoy for themselves. So they enjoy the wonderful gardens there. But in the spiritual world, that kind of enviousness is not there. Even the birds display this by their singing, and they praise others. And the plants also. The plants in the spiritual world also have this non-enviousness, and therefore they all praise one particular plant and push that plant forward for Krishna's pleasure. Which plant is that? Tulsi, yes. Tulsi Devi is recognized by all the other plants in the spiritual world as being able to please Krishna the most. And so therefore they bow to Tulsi, they push Tulsi forward for serving Krishna. This is the attitude that's there in the spiritual world. If we have that attitude, even as we're in this conditioned body, then we can be in Vaikuntha. When Prabhupada said, for instance, that the temples are like Vaikuntha, he meant it not just that, you know, the walls are ethereal, as you say, you can walk through walls, and this is a spiritual world, and something like that. No, but that the consciousness of the devotees in the temple is such that it's so attractive, because there's no enviousness and this competition that we find in the material world, but rather there's a desire to have to serve the other Vaishnavas, just to serve the other Vaishnavas. That's the spiritual world, that kind of attitude, to serve Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So that's what we find in descriptions in the Goswami literatures of the spiritual world. This idea of how to serve. And of course, there are varieties of attitudes of service in the spiritual world. Therefore, we find different levels. And this is what Sanatana Goswami describes in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The difference between Vaikuntha and Goloka Vrindavan. In Vaikuntha, there is a feeling of great awe and reverence, the grandeur of the Lord. I was surprised recently. I was hearing description of His Holiness Ma Nidhi Swami. He was describing different types of liberation. And he was describing there's one liberation where you can live on the same planet of the Lord. And what is that one? Does anybody know? Salokya, okay. So you can get Salokya liberation. You can live on the same planet as the Lord. But he was explaining what that means. It means you live there, just like we live in America, we live in Belgium or whatever, and say, there's a prime minister, or there's a president, and how often do we see them? You know, we might see him at some parade once a year or once every couple of years or something like that. And he's explaining that with Salokya liberation, you live on the same planet, O Lord, but it's not like you're constantly seeing him all the time. You know, like maybe once a year or something like that, you'll see him. So, is that what we want? You know, once a year to have darshan of the Lord, something like that? No, there's other types of relations with the Lord which are more intimate, just like the residents of Goloka Vrindavan. The residents of Goloka Vrindavan, they see Krishna all the time, all day, and they engage in service to Krishna all the time, every day. So that's a more desirable destination for the living entity to be in direct service to Krishna on a regular basis every day. That's what it's like in Goloka Vrindavan. That's sort of the difference between Vaikuntha Loka and Goloka Vrindavan. But even in Goloka, there are gradations of feelings, loving feelings, exchanged with the Lord. And of course, we know that we are aspiring to be, or following in the footsteps of, the gopis of Vrindavan, right? That's what we're doing in Krishna consciousness. And so, those highest feelings given to us by our acharyas are again something that is given to us directly to practice every day. We did it a few hours ago this morning when we had Tulsi Aarti. At Tulsi Aarti, we sing a kirtan, and that kirtan describes the feelings, the highest feelings of love that the living entity can have for Krishna. And so that is what we aspire for. I have a translation of the kirtan here that I'm going to read. And I'd like you to try to notice the type of desires and feelings which are being expressed by the devotee who wrote this Tulsi Kirtan, because they are indicative of attaining spiritual perfection for us. It says, O Tulsi, beloved of Krishna, I bow before you again and again. My desire is to obtain the service of Shushi Radha and Krishna. So the first thing is that our desire to go to these wonderful lakes that are described in the verses we read today is because we want to enjoy ourselves. But a pure devotee's desire is not to enjoy themselves, but to serve Radha and Krishna. So my desire is to obtain the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And so why is he approaching Tulsi Devi? Because he said, whoever takes shelter of you, you bestowing your mercy upon him, make him a resident of Sri Vrindavan. So if we want to go be in Goloka Vrindavan, then we have to get the mercy of a resident of Goloka Vrindavan. And Tulsi Devi, we're asking, you're very merciful, make me a resident of Vrindavan. Is it so that I can enjoy the pleasure groves of Goloka Vrindavan myself? No. My desire is that you grant me residence in the pleasure groves of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So is that the same kind of desire as going to visit those lakes and mountains and forests on our own? No, the attitude is different. Because why the pleasure groves of Sri Vrindavan Dham? Because thus within my vision I will always behold the beautiful pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. I beg you to make me a follower of the cowherd damsels of Braja, the gopis. We want to follow them. We don't want to imitate them. We don't want to take their place. We want to serve them. That's a spiritual desire for service of others for the pleasure of Krishna. And therefore, that's why we want to be in Vrindavan Dham. We don't want to be there for our own enjoyment, but to serve Radha and Krishna. I beg you to make me a follower of the cowherd damsels of Raja. Please give me the privilege of devotional service and make me your own maidservant. This very fallen and lowly servant of Krishna praise may always swim in the love of Sri Sri Radha and Govinda. So, to swim in the love of Sri Sri Radha and Govinda means to serve those servants of Krishna. And if we do that, we'll get reciprocation. We'll actually come to the understanding that pleasure really means giving pleasure to Krishna. That's what the meaning of pleasure is. Not that there's some kind of separate, independent enjoyment of pleasure, but pleasure is simply connected with serving Krishna. That type of mentality, that type of service mentality, is characteristic of the highest realm, spiritual realm, Goloka Vrindavan. And that's available to us. That process has been made available to us by chanting Hare Krishna, by following the temple program. As I said, we sing this bhajan every morning, this Tulsi Kirtan. And by singing, we're expressing our desire in these ways. We're expressing our feelings for Krishna in the highest way. And if we do that, then we won't be attracted by all these wonderful, amazing descriptions that we find that are descriptions of the material world, not descriptions of the spiritual world. Actually, in the Goloka Vrindavan, the atmosphere there is very simple. It's very simple. It's just like village life. Very simple village life in Vrindavan. And the beauty is not of manicured gardens and everything like that. No, it's just a forest beauty. And the flowers, they're not even cultivated. They're just wild flowers. They're growing wild through the forest in a very beautiful way. So the simple village life of Goloka Vrindavan, they're cowherd people. They take care of the cows. That is the beauty, natural beauty we want to enjoy, not the amazing as it seems, these descriptions that we find here of Jambudweep, which is within the material world. Because Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Overturn Arjuna Mamupecha Tukantaya Punar Janma Navidyate. This material world, even up to these places, they are places where birth and death take place. We have to continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. And one life we may be able to enjoy these kind of things. Next life we may find ourselves in a very hellish condition of life. That's just the nature of the material world. So why risk all that? Why not go back to the eternal spiritual world and enjoy there forever in this mood of a servant of Krishna? So these are some thoughts on these verses. Sureshwar Prabhu. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that being drafted into Madhurya Rasas would be such a bad thing. Right. Yeah, well, that's we're given a practice. Just like we have this book, Archana Paddhati. Paddhati means a particular path or sort of prescribed prescription for how to get from here to there. And so there are different paddhatis even within the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, you know. Like Prabhupada has given us a particular thing. Like the morning program is our paddhati. We have Mangalarti, then we have Tulsi Puja, then we have Japa, then we have Guru Puja, then we have Bhagavatam class. That's everywhere in ISKCON. Prabhupada has given this program to follow that program. And so we follow that program, and by pleasing Prabhupada by doing that, then whatever spiritual revelation, and you're absolutely right, it's a matter of revelation. It's not a matter that we do this paddhati and we do this path and that we're forcing by the force of our endeavor in this regard, we get, you know, spiritual world or something. No, it's not like that. It's revealed. But we're pleasing our spiritual master following the path he's given us. So we do that with faith that whatever I need to know about the spiritual world or spiritual life will be revealed to me by my spiritual master, and so but we follow what he's given us. That's all we can do. Now, there's a lot out there in the Vedic culture. There's even a lot out there in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. But we don't follow those paddhatis. They're different. You know, they're given by others, for others. We follow what Prabhupada gave us. And so we concentrate on that, and we should become absorbed in that. So he gave us a Tulsi Kirtan. We should try to become absorbed in what it really means. Without thinking all of a sudden, well, I'm a gopi or something. We don't think like that. That's something that comes with revelation, not by force or any kind. So, yeah, Dadu. Yeah. We're singing it following what Srila Prabhupada has given us. And that may have to be, that understanding may have to be as if that's some, you know, limitation or something. It may have to be all we know at this point in time that we follow it. But that we follow it and that we should become absorbed in it is proper and correct because that's what Prabhupada has given us. Where it leads us, that's individual, as you point out, and certainly it will remain individual. It's not. Right. Yes. Yeah, even Lord Chaitanya was like pushing him, you know. But then he went to Lord Chaitanya and said, well, I have to give up my life because I can't follow your instruction because I can't give up the Raghupati, the Lord of my heart. And so Lord Chaitanya said, yes, okay. don't worry. So, but the point is that he took that instruction and he didn't just, I'm a devotee of Ram. No, he tried to follow the instruction given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but then the Lord relieved him, so. Yes. You see, the point is that spiritual life means that's the reality, and the rest is a dream. Like, we might be dreaming something, and then we have to wake up and get on with the reality of our life, no matter how sweet the dream may have been. But the point is that in this material world, all the duties and obligations and, as you say, the purpose, what we're here for in life, it's all a dream. And the reality is spiritual life. So we have to focus on that. Now, of course, that's not an easy thing because we don't perceive ourselves as spiritual beings completely. We perceive ourselves as such and such person who has such and such responsibilities in this world. And so as we execute those responsibilities we have in the material realm, we should have a spiritual foundation. We should have spiritual practices which we take. We should have spiritual goals that we're seeking in life. And as we go through life, we'll find, just like you see so many devotees, they've given up all connection with the material world and they're dedicated 100% to serving in the spiritual duties in life. They're not the loser in terms of their material things. And Krishna promises this in Bhagavad Gita. He says that don't worry about giving up the material things for engaging in spiritual things, because I'll preserve what you have and I'll carry what you lack. So all those things that we're worried about in the material duties that we have to execute and complete, they can be taken care of by engaging in devotional service. Good question. Is it spiritually selfish if it's at the cost of someone else's happiness? Well, that's the benefit that Krishna gives to one who gives up material duties to perform him. He, as I said, he carries what you lack. He'll take care of those responsibilities. Just recently, I was with Giriraj Swami, and one of his disciples, her father was dying. And so he was talking to the man on the telephone, and he was trying to assure him, don't worry, Krishna will take care of your family. He'll take care of, you know, that. Now you just concentrate on him. So at the time of death, we're faced with this kind of situation where we can't do anything about our material obligations, but we're leaving. And so at some point we have to say, okay, well, I'm going to give that up because I'm dying now. We should have that consciousness all the time, not just at the time of death, that let me give as much of my consciousness and attention I can to the spiritual side of life with the faith that Krishna will take care of these other things. Because ultimately, he's going to have to take care of them anyway, because I'm not going to be around to take care of them. I'm going. And we can get completely sucked in a whirlpool of false duties in the material world and forget completely our spiritual life, and we'll be the loser on both things, because at the death, all those duties will be unfulfilled, and neither will we have been able to execute the duty of this human form of life to become Krishna conscious. Yes? You have more? Breaking the law. Mm. Well, we have to become expert how to do both things. But if you had to choose between one or the other, then in consultation with the devotees, choose your spiritual thing. Anything else anyone has? I think we're supposed to end at 1:45. Granta Rashimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.